From Sacramento, the Bishop's Radio Hour with Bob Dunning. Focusing on today's issues in the context of gospel values. Now, here's Bob Dunning on Relevant Radio.
Beautiful day the Lord has made. Appreciate you all being with us on the Bishop's Hour. We're joined by Lincoln Snyder, the director of Catholic schools here in the Diocese of Sacramento. Lincoln, good morning.
Yeah, good morning. Thank you for having me on again.
Good to have you on. The last time we talked, you were announcing just a program that just pulled at my heart, and I'm sure the heart of all of our listeners, the offer from Catholic schools here in the Diocese of Sacramento, which covers all 20 counties in Northern California, including Butte County, where the terrible camp fire was about a month ago now. Did anybody displaced, any kid displaced, we've got a place for them in Catholic schools, no questions asked, no tuition. If they need a backpack, if they need lunch, whatever they need, uniform, we're going to get it for them.
Yeah, we're very happy to be able to make that offer. This has been a very destructive and disruptive fire. Of course, the city of Paradise is around 29,000 people, but there were surrounding areas that were lost as well. And so in conversation with the public school superintendent up there for the Butte County Office of Education, over 4,000 kids lost their schools.
Wow. You know, when you think about an entire town virtually of 29,000 people being wiped out, there are all these. You think the immediate, there's no homes for them, there's no, but you don't realize all the tentacles of it and all the things it affects. People who work there don't have, if you worked at, whether it's McDonald's or in the grocery store or in a business of some kind, or even for a public agent, there's no job.
Exactly. And this fire has been particularly disruptive. One of our teachers Roseville, and one of our teachers at St. Rose School grew up in Paradise, and mm-hmm. her parents were among the first people that were allowed back in to see their home, or what had been their home, mm-hmm. God bless them, this past Thursday. Just this past Thursday, people are finally able to get back in just for a few hours just to see their home site. And so the place is still very toxic. People are still working night and day and cleaning up. Our emergency responders are still very much engaged, although perhaps it's faded a little bit from the front pages of the papers. This is still an ongoing tragedy for the people that were involved, and they're still displaced. They still don't know when they'll even be allowed to come back in to sift through what's left and start rebuilding. So
as you say, it's so extensive, and of course, right off the bat, you're worried about looting and all those kinds of things, but mostly they were keeping people out just because of the toxicity and still the danger down power lines, things like that. But you can't even imagine all the things that burn that are potentially toxic.
Yeah, absolutely. When you lose 260 businesses and buildings of varying ages, and it's just been brutal for the community, and especially knowing that these towns in the north are extremely tight-knit.
Yes.
And these are beautiful little communities where, you know, it's one of the great joys of my job has been getting to know the communities of the north, because they really do look out for each other. Church and school and all those great institutions are still very much a part of the fabric of daily life in the north. They rely on each other and rely on these institutions like school to bring the community together. And so, you know, as we looked at the empty spots we had in our schools, we just knew that we had to open them up to kids to come in and simply offer the desk. Of course, trusting that the community, our community, would provide for whatever material support the kids would then need once they came in. And so, so we've been very, very blessed with the response. You know, we've got, if I had to guess, probably close to 30 kids in our schools right now.
That's a remarkable number. So how did you get the word out?
We
here for one, but many other places, I'm sure.
Well, the media were kind to us. I have to offer my thanks to television and radio for picking up the story. We had a press conference in Chico the day after Thanksgiving, where we drove up and just spent a few minutes with some reporters from the local TV stations up there.
See, the nice thing is Chico, not being a big city, has forever had its own TV station.
Yeah, so we were on Channel 7 and Channel 12,
yep.
And then also on the Spanish language television up Telemundo, I forget the station number, sorry. Chico residents, but
Enterprise Record has been there forever as well, a hugely respected newspaper.
Absolutely, and they own the Paradise Post,
right?
As well, so the story went viral. I was kind of floored. I threw my boys in the car to make sure we had some students in uniforms for background, but
sure.
A number of Chico parents showed up with their kids too, and so they filmed us in the classroom and talked to me for a bit, and we were on CNN the next day. So. I was very humbled to see the media pick up the story,
yeah.
And that really has helped us too with getting the word out. We've been receiving donations, and thank you to everybody that's contributed to this effort, both for the broader diocesan fire relief page as well as
right.
to the school's effort. Getting donations from Connecticut and from now schools and other institutions are starting to donate.
Mm-hmm.
So to get a check from Santa Clara University or from the Jesuit High School up in Portland, Oregon. I mean,
wow.
It's all very, as well as our own schools here in the diocese doing free dress days and things like that. It's very kind. Everybody wants to help in some way. And
yeah.
so of course, people would love to donate things, but because everybody's yeah. so scattered, it's very hard to donate things right now. It's a challenge for us to distribute. We were very honest in saying, you know, we would love to be able to distribute stuff, but really what we need right now is cash, because that'll let us simply help a family where they're at when we encounter them without the complications of logistics, and people have been very responsive to that.
Yeah, I know. It's like, I mean, we interviewed people from Loaves and Fishes last week, like, what do they need at Christmas time? And they're very good at distributing things. You know, they need socks, and they need hygiene kits, and they need food, and that kind of thing. And there's something about when you're giving something tangible, it feels better to you than writing a check or pulling $20 out of your pocket. But in reality, in these major disasters, you hear that over and over and over again. What they really need is cash because of the flexibility.
Yes, it allows us to do things like purchase gift cards, mm-hmm. or simply, I mean, if somebody has been staying in the Walmart parking lot, that's an opportunity for us to simply get them into the Walmart and go shopping.
Yes.
So,
yes.
Walmart's not an advertiser on this show. It's just an example. Cash is important, and yes, as you say, people want to donate stuff. Even my little congregation, Our Lady of Częstochowa, they wanted to bring stuff in, and I had to say, you know, we'll have a day will come when we'll be able to distribute that.
Right.
So
right.
If you've got something, thank you, and please hold on to it, and we'll
right.
figure it out. But for right now, we're just trying to meet people where they're at.
Do we know how far people are scattered now? I mean, you think of, you know, there's going to be a real impact on Chico and Oroville and maybe even Marysville, Yuba City, that area. But presumably some of these people end up in Sacramento. Some of them end up in Chattanooga, probably.
We do have families in Sacramento. So shout out to our St. Mary's community mm-hmm. in East Sacramento and Our Lady of the Assumption. I know that they've taken kids.
Now they've taken students.
They have. Yes, they have. And so we're going to be working this week on collecting some stories from the kids and how they found themselves where they're at. You know, of course, in a way that honors their privacy and
sure.
identity. But
sure.
but we want to tell the stories of how people do respond when these things happen. You know, a lot of it, no natural disaster is the same. But of course, every time that we go through an exercise like this, and unfortunately, it's happened a little bit too often in the North State in the last few years for comfort. But of course, we learn about how we'll be better prepared to respond and to help the next time it comes up.
So the 30 kids, are they primarily in that immediate area?
Mostly in the immediate area, but we definitely have kids in Sacramento as well. I'd say that over a third are in Chico, and we have a number in Oroville. But yeah, the families have simply gone where they had kin, I think, and had a place to stay.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm very grateful to Bishop and the school boards and everybody that's been involved to really help us make this a diocesan effort, not
mm-hmm.
just a single school one, because that does let us meet the kids where they're at.
Have you discussed this with other superintendents in other dioceses that that maybe people like the Diocese of Stockton, the Diocese of Fresno, even some of the Bay Area diocese, that they may be impacted as well?
Yes, we do. So we have a superintendent's conference here in California, and we talk shop, and we definitely share out every time there's an event like this, mm-hmm. what we did and how we responded, and we do learn from each other. After the Santa Rosa fires, I learned a lot from my sister superintendent in the Diocese of Santa Rosa mm-hmm. about how they responded to that effort. Actually, she had come and presented to a leadership group for me in October mm. in Vallejo on what to do when you have a major fire in your diocese. And that really has helped us think through some of the things that could come up. One of the lessons we learned, for example, is that let's say that St. Susie's School burns down. Mm-hmm. You want to make sure that St. Sally on the other side of town is prepared to receive those St. Susie
right.
kids
right.
the
right.
next week. And the retired superintendent of the Archdiocese of New Orleans, for example, has been very helpful for me in talking through what they did after Katrina.
Mm-hmm.
For example, they lost half their schools, and so they doubled up their schools. The mm-hmm. St. Sally became St. Sally from 8 to 1, and then it was St. Susie from 2 to 7.
So they actually split it.
They did.
As opposed to trying to merge everybody into one classroom.
They split it.
Oh, that's interesting.
And, of course, if school were small enough and we could merge people, we would. But one of the things we did is we simply went through and quietly started saying, okay, so if St. Susie burns down, then the kids will go to St. Sally the next Monday.
Uh-huh.
And so understanding that we needed to create expectations about how we respond so that people are prepared for it and can go into response mode rather than what do we do mode
right.
Was really important. And so though we hadn't planned for simply opening all schools of the diocese to public school kids who had been displaced, I think just the fact that we had thought through, okay, so we are going to open up our schools to bring in a neighboring school if their mm-hmm. school burns down and vice versa,
right.
really created a baseline expectation of, okay, we're going to do what we can. And and really, three of the plan was hatched during a conversation when I was in Reno escaping the smoke, and I was on a conference call with three principals in the north, and everybody had kind of spontaneously come to the same conclusion. You know, we should really just take whoever we can, and mm-hmm. That's how the plan was hatched.
Wow. So around 4,000 kids all the way through mm-hmm. high school, and we know Paradise High School was destroyed as well. Do we know, are most of them in school somewhere?
Many of them are in school somewhere, and I'm going to have another follow-up conversation with the public school superintendent for Butte County today. But they really don't know themselves. It's not like there's a master database that when mm-hmm. a kid shows up and goes to a public school in another city, say, that they immediately find out about it. So they've asked us to share numbers with them just to give them an expectation of who's ended up where. They're working hard to bring in portable classrooms or other things that would probably go to the Chico area
mm-hmm.
And would allow them to get kids reunited with their teachers, which really we, of course, are completely supportive of. We right. want kids back together with their friends and their
exactly.
teachers and add a sense of normalcy. But it's complicated just because you may have had a classroom of 30 kids that may be down to, I don't know, 15 or 20. And so mm-hmm. they're trying to guess what needs to happen just as
right.
much as we are, even more so.
Is Chico kind of ground central for all of the aid and the trying to analyze, like you say, people going, well, how many of the kids from Paradise, where are they? There's 4,000 of them. Where are they? And like you say, do we need 20 portables or do we need 50 portables? And do we put them all at one elementary school or do we scatter them or Chico High School, where do they go? I mean, it's interesting that a lot of these kids from Paradise, they know Chico, they know Oroville because they play each other in all these sports, you know, or cheerleader camps and all those things. And now they're going to be classmates.
Exactly. Chico is ground zero. Of course, it's the largest city of the region.
Right.
It's very close to Paradise.
Right.
They have capacity. They have multiple schools or multiple locations, and so it probably gives them more flexibility in determining, okay, well, you know, we may need up to 10 portables, and here's the back lot of a school where we can mm-hmm. set them up. But FEMA's been slow to respond, and it's perhaps been a little bit more chaotic on the ground than perhaps the way I imagined Katrina rolling out. Mm-hmm. But everybody's doing their best to work through that and help as they can.
So are there state agencies involved as well? Is FEMA, of course, is federal?
Yeah, state agencies, county agencies, emergency responders. It is all very much all hands on
deck. Bang heads every now and then?
I don't think so. I think that everybody's trying to do what they can, you know, again, because these are smaller communities and perhaps a little bit less bureaucratic, at least, you know, stereotyping. I think it seems to be smaller. Smaller communities in general also mean fewer agencies, or at least if there are multiple agencies, the people kind of seem to know each other in mm-hmm. my experience. And so I know everybody on locally is doing what they can to...
Is there an overriding czar to say, okay, here's the problem, and here are all these different agencies, of very, you know, and including private, like the Catholic schools, and this is how we're going to attack this problem?
It's more complicated than just having one clearinghouse. Mm-hmm. Getting into it, hopefully this is a lesson that also you know, we can take into account for future disasters. Yeah, of course, having somebody that would be ultimately accountable for a coordination of all the agencies would be great, but you know, we have a federal system and subsidiary works or is the principle of our governments as well as our church, and so. But as far as I know, there's a lot of lateral communication between agencies. The players know each other up mm-hmm. there, and they're talking. So our principals, for example, have been invited to attend FEMA meetings and county meetings, and it's just going to take a while.
So, I can't even imagine. You wake up one day, and maybe you're in the Walmart parking lot trying to camp. Maybe you're in a shelter in a gym in Chico or something, and you've got your kids who aren't in school, you don't have a job anymore, your spouse doesn't have a job anymore. It's just, it's mind-boggling to think, where do you go? Is there some clearinghouse that says, come here if you need help?
Well, one of the challenges in talking through this with my colleagues is looking for older people, for example. We do have privacy laws that even sure. if an older person's checked into a shelter, they're not going to give you the list, even if yeah. you're from the church and saying, you know, we've yeah. been caring for Mrs. Smith for years and
right.
we're looking for her, we're afraid she may have died, and no, we can't give you that information.
Right.
So the bringing people back together is complicated. Social media has played a big role in it because the official channels do have concerns like privacy. So I know that grassroots people were putting up lists on social media and other places, and a lot of communication was going through mm-hmm. there.
Wow. So you figure you have around 30 kids.
We have around 30 kids.
And two of them in the Sacramento area.
At least two in the Sacramento area. We're ready to take more. Donations continue to trickle in. We think that more kids may continue to trickle in as well, just mm-hmm. as families realize that they may be displaced for longer. You know, yeah. I'm sure a lot of parents have decided to keep their kids home until they could make the next move, rather than put them into school and then pull them out again.
My guess is that's probably where the majority of the 4,000 are, is not going to school at all.
Yeah, there's certainly that chance. And, you know, in the meantime, like as I said, we continue to receive donations, and so we have the capacity to help more kids. We know that the NCEA, I just heard our National Catholic Education Association, just wrote to me this morning, and they're going to renew their postings on social media, et cetera, mm-hmm. about the effort, because, again, as it fades from the front pages of the newspapers and headlines of the television news media, doesn't mean that the families aren't still trying to figure things out.
So in the Catholic schools specifically, what do you need the money for? What will that money go for?
We figure that $1,200 per kid would get us a long way in terms mm-hmm. of getting clothes and backpacks and school supplies and food.
Right.
We want to make sure that we can provide. The single biggest line item actually is hot lunch. Just mm-hmm. want to make sure that we can provide money for those kids' lunches, so right. the families don't have to worry about that. I put in for a grant to get money to hire an additional preschool mm-hmm. aide in Chico, for example, to make sure that we could bring more kids into the preschool.
Right.
So it's kind of got a chicken and egg thing there, because we don't want to charge the families tuition. So,
right.
we're looking to add some additional staff an additional staff member at the preschool to be able to accept up to 10 kids there. So things like that. We're really just looking for ways to offset the overhead cost of providing for these kids. But we know that $250 for uniforms, for example. That's a line item. We know that that gets kids a full set of school uniforms, plus things like T-shirts and underwear and socks and mm-hmm. and gym clothes and other things that, you know, if they're only living out of a suitcase, getting a full set of school uniforms and blue chinos and that kind of stuff is going to go a long way for increasing their overall wardrobe and
just their self, you know, I mean they're strangers, you know, as welcoming as anybody wants to be, you're a stranger in the middle of a terrible crisis, and I can imagine being a fourth grader and being kind of shy about going to a new school and all that, you know, and the more they can be normal, the better.
Absolutely. Every kid loves getting a new backpack.
That's right.
And so really the hope is that when the kid shows up for the Catholic school and it's, here's your backpack and here's your logo shirt and here's your uniform skirt for the girls and really make them feel like they're part of the community right out of the chute.
Is transportation perhaps a problem for some of these kids?
It might be. We did make the offer for Mercy High School as well, mm-hmm. and we do have some busing options for Mercy High School. Our elementary schools are present in enough towns that we're hoping that it's not a huge issue. We've got schools in Redding, Red Bluff, Chico, and Oroville mm-hmm. in the far north, as well as in Yuba City and Colusa.
I was going to say Colusa. Are some of those, have people gone north as well? Do we have kids that have shown up in Redding or Red Bluff?
Red Bluff. Mm-hmm. We've added kids in Red Bluff for mm-hmm. sure. Yeah, it's about 45 minutes north, right. And so as people headed out of town, again, it seems that people may have... People in our northern communities often have relatives in neighboring communities. Yeah. So, yeah, we definitely had people end up in Red Bluff, for example. Again, these are small, tight-knit communities, and people hang together, and we're just blessed to have received support so we can be a part of that.
You know, I know from the many times I've been in the North State, there are towns that's just generations, and you can... Sometimes you can go out to the old cemeteries and see the same names, and it goes back into the early 1800s, and oh, I know that family. They're still here.
Yeah, absolutely. That was my, you know, in a past life, I was a manager of a shopping center in Chico. In Colusa.
In Colusa, yeah.
Must be, I've got Chico on the mind. No, I was, what a wonderful little town of 6,500 souls, but everybody knows everybody and everybody goes way back. And so when people do have a need, it doesn't go unnoticed.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember being in Colusa one time, and it was the first time I'd been there in a long time, and I was looking for the Catholic Church, and a woman walking down the street and rolled down the window, and she didn't speak English. And I just said, Iglesia. And she goes, instantly. She was probably coming from there, you know.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's one of those magic moments where, you know, the Lord's looking out for you.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so Colusa is one of those special towns. Yeah. So, and we've had, what is it, Our Lady of Lourdes?
Our Lady of Lourdes. We've got, still got a great, great, great Catholic school in Colusa at Our Lady of Lourdes. And so, so looking forward, we're... again, hoping that we've got the fundraising in place for the kids that have already enrolled to make sure that they're well situated through the end of the year. But we love to accept more, and so we're still hoping that if the need is there, that we'll be able to. We've definitely got the space for these kids to welcome in more.
Boy, that's great! That's great. And tell people how anybody is listening that whether they're in need or they know somebody in need, how can they avail themselves of this.
Sure. So if they go on the diocesan website, which is www.scd.org, SCD for Sacramento Catholic Diocese, scd.org, there's a link that says fire assistance, and people could choose to donate either to the general fund or to the student fund. If they have any questions about how we could help find a displaced child to school, we'd love to get the phone call. Our phone number at the Catholic School Department is area code 916-733-0112, and our assistant extraordinaire Yasmin would be able to direct any family looking for a placement to the closest school and get them in touch with the principal for them to go meet the principal and hopefully find a placement for their child.
Very good. And the best way to donate money, whether credit card, cash, check, how it was the best way to do that?
Yeah, so if they go on the website and there's a button that says fire assistance and they've got information there either to donate by credit card or by check, and the money's being held at the Catholic Foundation, and I've got a statement on there about exactly what the money's going to be used for, which would be first for the material assistance for the kids and things like lunches, and then if we... our goal is to make sure that we've got the resources to offer them, keep them in school through the end of the year. If we had any leftover funds, we then apply that to assistance in future years.
Very good. Lincoln, thanks for all you do. This is it's a very difficult moment, but it's it's an opportunity for all of us to step up.
Absolutely, and we're just grateful for the support. So thank you.
Thanks, Lincoln. Appreciate it very much. That's Lincoln Snyder, the director of Catholic schools here in the Diocese of Sacramento. We'll take a quick break. We'll be back with more on the Bishop's Hour right after this. This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the St. Vincent de Paul Society. Drop by and shop at their thrift store, a beautiful, beautiful thrift store at 2275 Watt Avenue. Open Mondays through Saturdays from 10 to 8 and Sundays from 11 to 6. They also accept donations at the store, donations of furniture, appliances, clothing, books, everyday household items. Your donations help to fund the many projects of the St. Vincent de Paul Society throughout the Diocese of Sacramento. Do such wonderful, wonderful work, and the thrift store is one of the ways they raise the funds to help people throughout the diocese, and also many of their clients are able to access the thrift store for items that they need. You can give them a call. They will come pick it up as well, but you can give them a call. They're at 916-972-1212. And remember, again, the thrift store is open 7 days a week at 2275 Watt Avenue right here in Sacramento. Well, Bishop Soto refers to Christ the King Retreat Center as the jewel of the diocese, and indeed it is. What a beautiful oasis it is. It's located in Citrus Heights, right in the hustle and bustle of the city, and you feel like you're getting away from it all when you turn off the main road and just come into Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center. Christ the King has served Northern California and the Diocese of Sacramento for over 60 years through parish weekend retreats, individual spiritual direction, and a variety of other programs. For information on all the programs that they offer, including residential programs, give them a call. They're at 916-725-4720, or you can visit them at 6520 Van Maren Lane in Citrus Heights. And we certainly thank the St. Vincent de Paul Society and Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center for their fine and longstanding support of the Bishop's Hour.
Hey, this is James Kavanaugh, Director for the Office of Worship, and this is the Bishop's Hour with Bob Dunning.
That's me. Welcome back, and thanks to James Kavanaugh for all he does here in the Diocese of Sacramento. An awful lot happening as we move ever closer to Christmas. The Choose Life 2019 middle school youth gatherings in observance of Roe v. Wade, and they're inviting 7th and 8th grade students, teachers, parents, and ministers to be a witness to life, learn to defend life. What does it really mean to be pro-life versus pro-choice? How can we talk about abortion with our family and friends? How can we make a difference in our schools and churches? Tuesday, January 22nd, next month, 10 a.m. to noon program and a 6:30 to 8 p.m. program. This, again, for 7th and 8th graders, will be take place at the Holy Rosary School Gym, which is in Woodland, 505 California Street in Woodland. Those of you who are maybe have been to Holy Rosary Parish in Woodland, this is not where the church is. The school is a few blocks away from the church, so it's at the school. The school gym, 505 California Street. That's an excellent, excellent program. You'll see a live ultrasound, which has such a tremendous effect on kids and on all of us. Also, then on Wednesday, January 23rd, 10 a.m. to noon program at the Mercy High School gym in Red Bluff, 233 Riverside Way in Red Bluff. And then 6:30 to 8 p.m. on Wednesday, January 23rd in the evening at our Divine Savior Parish at the Parish Hall there in Chico, 566 East Lassen Avenue in Chico. Well, we're pleased to go to Elk Grove, and we welcome in Patty Suter from St. Maria Goretti Parish. Patty, good morning.
Good morning, Bob. How are you?
Doing fine. How are you?
I am great. I am great. Thank you.
Good to hear your voice again.
Uh-huh. Good to be with you.
Tell us what's happening.
Well, it is December, and we're getting ready, obviously, for Christmas. Real quickly, this Wednesday, of course, we have the Feast of Our Lady of Guadalupe.
Yes.
And we're having a traditional mass at 7 p.m. with some mariachis, and mm-hmm. we're inviting traditional dress, and our families will be bringing flowers to the altar to the Blessed Mother. And afterwards, we will be having a little festival with Mexican breads and cookies and Mexican hot chocolate. So that's 7 p.m. this Wednesday.
So what's the difference between that hot chocolate and maybe the hot chocolate I grew up with as a kid?
Well, I wish I could tell you that, because remember, Bob, you and I have talked before. I'm Irish, so it's they call it Mexican hot chocolate. And
no, I know. I've seen it. I've seen it for sale. Many times, and it's delicious, but I don't know if the ingredients are different or they're not.
I have no idea. Yeah. I just know that the ladies that are making it buy special stuff. It's not what you and I would go buy at the grocery store.
Yeah, and we know you and I both know what's in the Irish hot chocolate.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. I don't think this is the same. But they're we're expecting a beautiful celebration in honor of the Feast of Our Lady of Guadalupe.
Oh, and what an important day it is, period.
Yes.
For the entire world. But it is such a special day here in the Diocese of Sacramento, in California, of course, Arizona and New Mexico. It is very big, and of course in Mexico.
Yes, in fact, it's interesting because one of the gals who helped us organize it actually left to go to Mexico to celebrate the feast with her family.
Wow.
And so she helped us, you know, with all the particulars. And then she said, but next year I will be spending it here in our parish with our parish family. Mm-hmm. So, yes, it is. It's a big festival for our church, but it's also a very special festival for our members of Mexican heritage.
It's both, you know, I mean, to many, many, many of us, it's a religious event, but it's very much a cultural slash religious event as well. That image is just so iconic.
Yes.
And it's so beautiful.
Yes. So that's this Wednesday. Then on Sunday, which is December 16th, mm-hmm. Maria Goretti is having its annual Simbanga Bee. And I know you and I have talked about
yes.
that at length in the past, but it's the 9-day novena prior to Christmas.
Right.
And some also call it Miso de Gallo, which is the mass of the rooster or the
right.
cock. And that begins on Sunday, December 16th, and we begin every day of the 9 days with a 5 a.m. rosary. Then the novena is at 5:20,
mm-hmm.
and the mass is at 5:30.
Right. This is in the morning.
In the morning, a.m., yes. Yes.
Now, this is from the Philippines, is that right?
It's got heritage predominantly in the Philippines. It was brought by the Spaniards.
Mm-hmm.
to the Philippines, and it's also celebrated in Mexico. But in both cultures, it was because they're very hardworking, early, outdoor
mm-hmm.
people,
mm-hmm.
and in order to start their day, they had to do it early.
Yeah.
And so they would process to the local church and have their mass, and their novena, and then the mass. And traditionally, there is a meal following.
Mm-hmm.
And so we do. We have a meal that follows, and anyone who comes to Mass is welcome to join in the fellowship and the meal following Mass.
Very good, very good.
Yep.
And that's runs right
right
into Christmas.
Up to the 24th, yes.
Right.
The Sunday the 16th till Monday the 24th, every morning starting at 5 a.m. Yep.
Very good. Give the address of St. Maria Goretti.
Sure, 8700 Bradshaw Road,
well, that's
Elk
easy.
Grove.
Yeah.
95624.
Very good.
But we have a new event this year, Bob. And we're doing parish neighborhood Christmas caroling.
Oh, very good.
Yes, we're starting, and it starts on Sunday the 16th as well, and we are running it every evening until Sunday, December 23rd, and every night it's at a different three locations. So we're going to be in three different locations throughout the parish with few dozen carolers and singers that will arrive at these designated homes. They're parishioners who have said, come to my neighborhood. I will invite my neighbors, and we'll have some caroling.
Oh, what a great idea.
Yeah, and so it's between 7 to 8:30. I'm not going to give you the addresses over the radio,
right.
But all anyone who is interested needs to do is call the parish,
mm-hmm.
or go to our website, and we've got a link there where if you're interested in the addresses, you can click on the link, and it'll give you the date and the address.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah, so, and it's all ages. We've had so much fun over the last couple of weeks having our practices. Mm-hmm. They're singing, you know, traditional Christmas songs, and all ages are coming, and we're just breaking them up into groups, and they're going to go out and bring the joy of Christmas to neighborhoods and just try to get everyone in the spirit and to think about what it is we're really doing at this time of year.
What a wonderful idea.
Thank you.
We'll see how it works out. Hopefully it'll be we know it'll be chilly. It'll be chilly. But it'd be nice if it was just one of those kind of foggy
yeah.
nights, you know,
yeah.
where it's, the air is still and you just bundle up and everybody's happy.
Sure, it can be crisp and
yeah.
you know, just you snuggle and together everybody gets close and just sings and brings the joy to Christmas to the neighborhood. Yes.
Boy, that's great.
Okay.
Wonderful stuff. So,
Patty,
give the phone number of the parish if you have
it. Sure. Okay. The phone number is 916-647-4538. And our website is easy. It's just the initials for St. Maria Goretti, smgcc.net.
Very good.
So it's like St. Maria Goretti Catholic Church.net.
smgcc.net. Very
yes.
good.
Yes.
Patty, always a pleasure to talk to you. Thanks for all you do.
Thank you, Bob, for allowing me to share what we're doing in our parish, and just appreciate the Bishop's Radio and Relevant Radio so much. Personally, I enjoy it, and I know we have many of our parishioners that not only enjoy what's going on in the parish through your hour, but through the whole radio.
Very good. Well, thank you, Patty. God bless.
God bless you. Thank you, Bob. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas to you, too. We'll look forward to talking to you again soon.
Uh-huh. Thank you, Bob.
Thank
Bye-bye.
You. That's Patty Suter at St. Maria Goretti in Elk Grove. Isn't it wonderful that you have people like that out there working so hard to make all these, coming up with the ideas and working so hard to make all these events really, really go. We'll take a quick break. Back with more on the Bishop's Hour right after this. This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the Mercy Foundation, enriching lives in the Sacramento region through Sisters of Mercy ministries in healthcare, education, housing, and the care for the poor and elderly. For the Mercy Foundation, philanthropy is one of the most powerful expressions of compassion and love. Just as many people in our community need a hand, countless others are reaching out to them with comfort and hope. You can express your care and concern for the less fortunate with a gift to the Mercy Foundation. You can give them a call, 916-851-2700. That's 916-851-2700. And you can be confident that fully 100% of your contribution will support the Sisters of Ministry of Mercy Ministry or ministries that you choose. And what a wonderful treasure Easter's Catholic Books and Gifts has been for all of us here in the diocese as they transition into new ownership and management. They continue to offer wonderful workshops, wonderful resources for the Catholic community throughout the Diocese of Sacramento. Not only does Easter's provide a wide array of Catholic books, both current releases and longtime classics, but they also sponsor a number of valuable workshops and lectures throughout the year. They're located at 6916 Sunrise Boulevard in Citrus Heights. Give them a call, 916-338-7272. We also receive a generous underwriting support by Crumley & Associates, a private wealth advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services. If you have questions about retirement, Crumley & Associates can help you with their confident retirement approach that can help define a clear roadmap to get you where you want to go. You can contact them, get all the details at Crumley & Associates, 7956 California Avenue in Fair Oaks. They're at 916-638-4600. That's 916-638-4600. And we are certainly appreciative of the fine and longstanding support of the Mercy Foundation, of Easter's Catholic Books and Gifts, and of Crumley & Associates.
Hi, I'm John McGinnis, retired sheriff of Sacramento County, and you're listening to the Bishop's Hour with Bob Dunning.
Well, we welcome in Jim McCormick, wearing a different hat today, from Sacred Hearts, very world-famous, Schola Cantorum. Schola Cantorum mean? We can kind of guess.
Yes, School of Singers.
School of Singers.
Yeah, yes, it's great to be back on your show, Bob. Thank you very much. Yeah. Yeah, Bob and I will be talking about our upcoming Schola performances of From Heaven on High at Sacred Heart Church.
Two performances?
Yes, Saturday night at 8 o'clock and then Sunday the 16th at 2 p.m. in the beautiful, beautiful space known as Sacred Heart Church on the corner of 39th and J Street.
Very good. Saturday at 8 and Sunday at 2.
And I know that there will be tickets at the door for both performances. Mm-hmm. And Bob, do you know that it's been 26 years? This is our 26th anniversary of Schola.
Wow.
We've been in that space now for 26 years, more than a quarter of a century.
It's mind-boggling.
Yeah, it's just terrific. And, you know, 2014, Monsignor Walton oversaw the renovation of the church.
Right.
The acoustics are still beautiful. Thank you very much. And the space itself, ladies and gentlemen, if you're on your Advent journey or if you want to enhance it, we urge you to come and enjoy the serenity and the calmness of Sacred Heart Church this Saturday or Sunday and enjoy the music that is meant for this space.
Mm-hmm. And it's such a beautiful neighborhood.
It is.
The older homes. And,
yes, exactly.
A lot of them decorated this time of year as well.
I mean, you figure, Bob, 1931, the church, because it was an older Sacred Heart Church that burned down. But they built the building to last. And I think I wish I could have met the person who designed it because you and I both talk about acoustics.
Right.
And I think in a beautiful church that good sound is imperative. And, of course, I'm thinking of the choir.
Right.
So to have good sound that amplifies the beauty of the human voice, it's pretty amazing. I think one of the highlights is having our own organist, Ryan Enright. He will be with us at Sacred Heart for this concert. And then we have a guitarist, Peter Mancina. He'll be joining us for our work called God's Mother Bee. It's by Stephen Caracciolo. So Peter sang in Schola for a year or two, and he's a fine guitarist and a great middle school teacher. So we have a cappella, we have unaccompanied, we have candlelit procession, lots of Gregorian chant, and that's you know what, if you really, really want to rediscover the true meaning of Christmas, we urge people to come and join us.
You know, we hear that term Gregorian chant so often on this show that some people are probably afraid to raise their hand and say,
"Oh yeah,
what's Gregorian chant?"
Well, let's back up to chant, which is basically music that moves by step. It's calming. There's no wild, large intervals. Rhythmically, it's very soothing. It's not out to. There's no backbeat. Thank you very much. So it's normally a cappella. And, of course, Pope Gregory in, the 6th century, he codified and established the different chants, the different times of day for the monks. And so it's calming music that moves by step. And when people say they want to learn to sight read music, I encourage them to try to find a book that has Gregorian chant because it's accumulative. And it is meant to be soothing. And so Pope Gregory, they refer to it, because he was the one who codified it, so mm-hmm. they gave the term Gregorian chant. But chant has been around since time immemorial. And it's something that we can all do, and we don't realize it, you know. And it's quite mesmerizing. And I find a lot of the music that Donald Kendrick writes for Sacred Heart, it is based on a simple chant, mm-hmm. so that the congregation can pick it up really fast. And the range is limited, by the way, so that you don't have to be a super coloratura soprano to sing. And so it's, I think, some of the most beautiful music in the world, Gregorian chant. Oddly enough, the young people, millennials, mm-hmm. they're quite intrigued by chant. And every now and then you'll hear a bit on the radio, but it's got this backbeat which defies what chant is all about. So yeah, I'm glad you asked that question, Bob.
Very good. So did you bring a sample?
Is the Pope Catholic?
Is the Pope Catholic, yes.
Yeah, we did. Ladies and gentlemen, we have such an amazing variety on this concert. And the composers, a lot of them stem from England and from the U.S. We have a couple others from different countries, and I'll talk about them later. But right now, I thought we'd start with a work by Simon Andrews. And it's a new work for us. It's called Who Will Go to Bethlehem? And if I could, a couple of the lyrics here. Who will go to Bethlehem where shone the Magi's star? The glow above the manger, a vision now afar. And then it changes meter. Caroler, point the way. Sing Noel, Noel today. Who will go to Bethlehem by Simon Andrews.
Jim, that's all the time we have.
I know. You just like to play that all day, I know. Yeah, but if you can imagine that work in the space of Sacred Heart with the wonderful bridge acoustics, and we have the lighting low, but you can still read the program book, of course. And I just find when there's such hustle and bustle out there that if you just come into the boom of Sacred Heart Church and enjoy concerts about an hour and 20 minutes, no intermission. And between the sound and the repertoire, Donald Kendrick spends his summer chasing down good new Christmas repertoire. Mm-hmm. And they'll be tried and true, and there'll be probably at least one audience sing along.
Ah.
Yeah, everyone gets involved. We lift the roof off the church.
No Burl Ives, Holly Jolly Christmas.
I don't think I've gone through the list and I've checked it twice, and I didn't see it there, Bob. But thanks for asking. Perhaps next year you can lobby, but you better start now.
That'll take a lot of work.
I know. And as it turns out, coincidentally, Bob, we happen to have a good number of different Schola CDs available at the concert. Schola has about 4 to 5 Christmas CDs, mm-hmm. They're just great keepsakes. They make great stocking stuffers, and it's just a treat because this is the same choir that has sung for two different popes, you know, Pope Francis and Pope Benedict. And the group meets every Wednesday night. We rehearse for 2.5 hours. And then every Sunday from late August, or should say early September to late June, at the 11 o'clock liturgy, we help lead the liturgy. And they come from all walks of life, a different age span, but really committed to bringing beauty. It is all about inspiration and beauty in the liturgy every Sunday. But a couple times a year, we are able to do our own performances.
This is the 26th year of Schola. Is it also the 26th year of From Heaven on High?
Yes, it is. Good for you. Yeah, exactly. It was January 1992 that Donald Kendrick started mm-hmm. Schola, and we wanted in early December. We had Sac State concerts on the runway in early December, and then the Choral Society, and then Schola is always the third weekend of December. So that's been a tradition now for 26 years.
Wow.
And we have this amazing large sandwich board on 39th and J Street outside, and you'd be surprised at the traffic it gets.
Sure.
So
sure.
We're delayed. But I want to emphasize that we will have tickets available at the door.
Very good. So has it evolved over 26 years?
Well, it was fascinating. In 1992, there were 8 of us in Schola, and we were up in the balcony. Mm-hmm. And we had this, God bless it, Schoenstein old pipe organ that more or less functioned, but sometimes it created sparks in the compressor down below in the basement. So under Michael O'Hara's watch, God bless him, we were able to get a beautiful electronic digital organ. So we moved Schola from the balcony down to the right transept because we wanted to be with the people. And you know, Bob, down there in the transept, the sound is actually richer. Mm. But it feels good to be among the people and not hiding away in a balcony. So, yes, we've evolved because we went from 8 members to 32. And that's pretty well all the space we have in that transept. We have about 8 or 9 compact discs. We've traveled to Spain and England and Austria and Canada and other Italy a couple of times. But the group has an amazing spirit. But the commitment is something on a Wednesday night to make sure you have time to come and rehearse. We don't just roll in on a Sunday morning and sing the anthems, you know. So, and I commend Don Kendrick for choosing great repertoire that makes us want to come back to those rehearsals.
Let's talk about balconies for a minute. When I was a kid, the choir was in the balcony at the back of the church. And if you go into older churches, sometimes you'll still see a balcony up there. Usually the staircase is blocked off. Because my kids think that's where you should see, attend Mass is at the balcony, mostly because they think they can fool around up there.
It's intriguing.
Nobody will see them. But
check their text messages.
Exactly. So, and some still allow people up there, but you never see a choir there anymore.
Not so much, you're right.
I was up in Washington State a few years ago, though. And we didn't see a choir, and I wasn't aware of a balcony. And all of a sudden, here came Israel, like God was singing. You know, where did those voices come from? And it was at the back. Why has that changed?
Well, I know a good point. I think some of it, if balconies only have one entrance and exit, there are actually fire rules. When we renovated Sacred Heart, it was made clear to us that we are not really supposed to use the balcony for seating for people in a concert because there's only one way up and one way down.
Right.
And it sort of is a sad thing because the idea of a balcony is to have a hard surface behind the choir that would push the sound out once they start to sing. I really don't think I can answer that question. Although I really think with Vatican I, perhaps the idea of being among the people, too. And I know that was Scola's original idea that, okay, we'll get down there, be with the people. But what's neat with our situation, the organ, the digital organ is down on the right side, but the speakers are in the balcony. We can make those speakers talk or the speakers behind the altar the Mary altar. So we have control of the sound in the space. And we do like being downstairs with the people among them. But, and all these European churches, they have these sky-high balconies. And I remember in Santa Maria Sopra Minerva in Rome, our organist was in the balcony. The organ console was up there. He was like a mile away from the conductor, and he had a monitor so he could see Don conducting.
Sure.
And it worked. He had to sort of stay ahead of the beat. Yeah. But it's intriguing. Balconies, even as a kid, I remember thinking, oh, this is so exciting to be up here.
Exactly. Jim, do you have another cut for us?
Yes. Edwin Fissinger, he's passed away now, but he's an American composer. South Dakota, he taught at one of the colleges up there in South Dakota. Wonderful man. I had the opportunity to meet him many years ago at Lake Tahoe. And he wrote this, you know, just when you think there can't possibly be another beautiful arrangement. I mean, you and I both know Silent Night in our sleep, right? And you go, oh boy, here we go, another Silent Night version. But this is so inspirational. So Edwin Fissinger did this amazing arrangement of Silent Night. Normally the third verse is in German. So this is the second verse, I believe, we'll start on Silent Night by composer Edwin Fissinger. And I see on our postcard that went out, we use the phrase, experience the magic of Sacred Heart. Yeah. So it is about Advent, because we're heading into Christmas shortly. So this is a part of the preparation. So we use that line, experience the magic of Sacred Heart. And you know, Bob, I think that's what it really is.
Yeah.
I mean, the combination of music, a community that comes together, and the beauty of the space.
Yeah.
The serenity. I come back to that word, serenity. So this Saturday night at 8 o'clock at Sacred Heart Church, 39th and J, or Sunday the 16th at 2 o'clock, a 2 o'clock matinee at Sacred Heart. Ryan Enright, organist, Donald Kendrick, conductor, and the music of Schola Cantora.
People can get tickets at the door if they want to get them ahead of time?
Yes, there actually is a number in case you would like to call. For tickets in advance, we can put them at will call for you. You dial 850-545-4298. The website is scholacantorum.com.
Very good. Jim, you have
Yes, I thought we'd finish with Go Tell It on the Mountain.
Oh, very good.
American composer Paul Halley. And it just is a wonderful piece that is so full of joy. Go Tell It on the Mountain, Paul Halley.
Thanks, Jim, and thanks to all of you for listening. God bless.
Thank you, Paul.
Underwriting for the Bishop's Hour is provided by Catholic Funeral and Cemetery Services, a ministry of the Diocese of Sacramento. As a church-owned nonprofit founded in faith, Catholic Funeral and Cemetery Services is dedicated to providing education, support, and resources during life's most difficult moments. They will make every effort to enable you to realize your final wishes while empowering families to make completely informed decisions. You can give them a call. They are at 855-525-2285. That's 855-525-2285. We're also brought to you by a generous grant from Christine Cipperly, marriage and family therapist. If you're looking for help with family or personal problems, if you'd like help from someone with a Catholic point of view, someone who understands the importance of marriage and family and affirms the dignity of every human life, Christine Cipperly is a trained and experienced counselor of married couples, families, and individuals. She can work with you on your marriage, your parenting, or your individual struggles in a way that will not violate our faith. Christine is a wonderful, wonderful therapist. Give her a call. She's at 530-400-4757. That's 530-400-4757. We'd like to thank Christine Cipperly and Catholic Cemeteries and Funeral Services for their fine and longstanding support of the Bishop's Hour. That's going to do it for us for today. Thanks for listening, everyone. God bless. We'll talk to you again tomorrow. Thank you.